February. Todd, 28, Lancaster, Ontario.
Things are really going to shit, aren't they? Things are really going to shit. We thought things were going to shit before, but nah, now they're really going to shit. Things are really going to shit now, man. When you gotta send home electricians to jerry-rig a village's electricity just to keep the fucking lights on and refrigerators running? Well, I mean, that's a sign right there, you know? When you got a hole up in a pub with all these other wingnuts and assorted people because you're afraid, because your house is on the outskirts, and you're afraid of living on the outskirts because who the fuck knows when you'll go missing too, or abducted by aliens or terrorists or whatever the fuck is going on. And this is Canada, man. We used to eat donuts here. They only got two constables left in town, and they got into a fist fight right here on the main drag here, right in plain view of everyone, in the middle of the day, the last two cops in town just duking it out for everyone to see. And then the fight, it didn't even end up with one of them or the other getting knocked out or hurt or anything like that. The fight, it ended with the two cops, they started hugging each other, crying in each other's arms. That's how crazy everything has gotten. Again, right in plain view. These two cops, who'd been duking it out, were crying and hugging right here on the main drag in the middle of the day for everyone to see. And lots of people were watching, too, because it's not like any of us have been able to watch TV since the networks went down. So what else are you going to do, except watch the two remaining neighborhood cops wail on each other and sort out their personal affairs in the street? My ex, she used to give me all this shit about hanging out here too much, the pub, and so I try not to go here so often. But now, here I am holing up inside of it with all these other whack jobs. Things are really going to shit, is what I'm trying to say. That's my opinion of things. For your documentary, whatever it is you're doing. You see, my dad sold the family land because he wasn't getting enough from his pension to get by. Just to survive. That's how well the government was looking after him with the pension money. So Dad sold the land. There's nothing for me to inherit here. I had to start my own business, shoe repair business, make my own way in the world. I never had no intentions of moving away from Lancaster. I grew up here. Had to do something with myself, though, because it's not like my dad could bail me out of any of the sticky situations life throws at you on a regular basis. Your boots, by the way? The zipper on that left boot of yours? I can fix that if you want. That's fixable. We could walk over to the shop. It's just two buildings up the road here. I got the gear, we could fix that. Restitch that book bag of yours maybe too, if you're sticking around for a bit. It looks like you probably should stick around for a bit too, at least a couple of days anyway. You look like shit. You look like a cow patty someone stepped in. What, did you fall on your face or something? Maybe Carly can get you some peroxide or polysporin on some of those cuts. Carly's all right. She owns the place. You probably already met her though, I imagine. Anyway, yeah, I could fix your boots. You must have been out there for a while, eh? On the road. Cold out there right now. It was what, 30 below last night? Probably a miracle you even made it here from Montreal. We don't go anywhere outside the pub unless we're in groups. We are firm believers in the buddy system around here. The electrician, the repair team, they all drive around in the same van. No one lets anyone out of their sights. We buddy up to go to the John, even with us all in the pub here. Because believe it or not, we have lost people before, not here in the pub. We have lost people on fucking bathroom breaks before. Not me personally. I haven't lost track of my buddies yet. I haven't seen it happen, but a couple of people have. I remember I used to watch those post-apocalyptic type shows on TV. You know, the ones with the zombies taking over the Earth or aliens invading the planet. Those kinds of shows. How those shows were always so action-packed and there were monsters. Actual monsters that you could see and fight and... So I carry a gun on me, right? Because things have gone so to shit that it's starting to feel like we might be stuck in some kind of scenario like one of those shows. Except for no one seeing anything. When I say people have seen their buddies go missing, what I mean is they haven't actually seen their buddies go missing. Their buddies have just gone missing out of frame, if you understand what I mean. If what's happening to us were a TV show, everything crazy is happening outside of the frame, you know? Like a low-budget TV show that they can't show you anything because they didn't have the money for the special effects. No one's seeing any monsters, or terrorists, or anything. So I carry a gun now, but I mean, most of the time. I mean, I don't even know what I'm carrying a gun for, you know? The whole thing, everything. It's confusing the shit out of me, more than anything else. I might as well be carrying a book of how to solve Sudoku puzzles as carrying around a gun, because no one even knows what the threat is. We just know the symptoms of it. It's just a matter of what type of glue you use. On a zipper like that. We got some good quality glue here. I got some down in my shop. We'll go tomorrow. It'll keep those boots together for another year, you mark my words. I know what I'm doing. But things are really going to shit, aren't they?
Ed, 42, Lancaster, Ontario.
Ever hear that term? Bangers and mash. It's pub dish. Sausages and potatoes. Sausages are the bangers, and the mash refers to everything else on the plate besides the sausages. Well, a friend of mine has a saying, or he did back when he was still around. You can't banger without the mash. You get it? You can't, you know, without being left everything else on the plate. You get it? Half of them here, these people we're all hunkered down with, they got this belief in people, in humanity. Like, together, we can get through this thing or whatever. And then someone goes missing. And then there's all this wailing and crying, crisis and tragedy, and faith being tested and all of that shit. I don't believe in any of this. Any of this shit they're doing here. I'm just hunkering down here because it's relatively safe at the moment. I don't talk to any of them if I don't have to. Hell, the only reason I'm here talking to you is to save you from becoming like them. Believe in the strength of people working together, or whatever the fuck. You can't bang her without the mash. You get me? My buddy had it right. I mean, he was talking about chicks at the time, but it holds true with everyone. You can't hit the sweet spot with people and not expect all this shit to come with it. You can't make a friend without all the baggage they bring to the friendship. And I can tell. I can see it in your fucking eyes. You know what I'm talking about. You've just gone through something like this. You got involved with someone, didn't you? You did. I can tell. And all of the mash that came with it. And now, you're a fucking mess inside, aren't you? And you could have avoided it had you just stuck to yourself. This place is safe now. But it won't be for long. I don't think so. I don't believe that. What's to stop this little pocket of humanity from crumbling when everywhere else is falling apart? We don't even know what's happening in the cities right now. Do you have a gun yet? Do you want one? Because I have one I can give you. I'll have to show you how to use it first, so you don't blow your own goddamn foot off. But I have a gun I can give you, and you can have it, and 2 clips of ammo for it. And I'll show you how to use it. Because I can tell you've just been through something, and I feel... I shouldn't feel anything at all. Shouldn't let myself feel anything at all, but I do. I feel like you're some kind of kid that just got caught up in some kind of mistake. Mistakes happen to all of us. We all make mistakes. I sure did. My buddy I was telling you about, who said that about the bangers and the mash, we were pretty tight. Saw the world in pretty much the same way. We were out hunting when he disappeared. This was early in the days of all of this, back in October. No one knew it was going to be this big thing or anything like that back then. We were hunting partridge. He took the ridge, I took the dell. I returned from the dell, he never returned from the ridge. And we'd been hunting that land since we were 10 years old, since before we were even legally allowed to shoot guns. His name was Jake. He was my best friend. Good enough that I never needed another. And then came the mash. You know what I mean? I was living like a ghost right up until the press conference snapped me back into survivor mode. We all make mistakes. I'll help you get back on your feet. You learn how to use my gun, you'll be able to defend yourself. That's a good thing. But don't expect us to become friends or anything. I'll help you get back on your feet, but you gotta learn how to stand up for yourself. No matter what, do not befriend these people. And don't try to befriend me. Do yourself a favor. I don't think this place will survive the winter. You'll be lucky if you do.
Ed, 43. Carly, 37, Lancaster, Ontario.
My name is Carly Wilson, and I'm the current owner of the Stone Circle Pub here in the beautiful splendor that is Lancaster, Ontario. I am 37 years old. I'm a Pisces, which is some kind of fish, I've been told. I don't know what kind of fish it is, but it's some kind of fish. Don't know if it's trout or salmon or something out of the ocean like a bluefin tuna. What else do you want to know about me? The bar's been in the family for 2 generations now, and I've been running the place for my father ever since he disappeared in July. And since my mom and sister went missing in November, I've opened this place up as kind of like a refuge for people who don't feel safe living alone. I've made sure we were good and stocked with food and alcohol enough for the winter, but I wasn't sure how bad everything was gonna get. So now here we are, middle of February, and I'm starting to wonder if stores are going to last until spring or not. We've burned through all of the good scotches and rum last month, but we have tons of beer left. The one smart thing Dad did was install an extra large beer fridge in the basement. I was able to make sure we were super stocked with the stuff before everything started really going south. I don't mind having a drink either. And if this turns out to be the end of the world or something crazy like that, then you, me, none of us should be afraid of getting drunk as much as humanly possible. Can you imagine coming around to the end of it all? The end of days and having all this unused liquor still hanging around? We'd all feel pretty stupid then. More than anything, I'm keeping the place open like this to calm people's nerves, the ones that are left. Around 3 weeks ago, I started the whole community wake session so that every Friday, anyone who is interested can come here and drink their fill. And we get Harvey over there. Harvey, he's the town mayor. He rattles off lists of people we've lost each week. And then after he's done reading off the names, Paul and Emily over there. Paul, he's a fiddler, and Emily, she can sing pretty decent. So we get Paul to start playing his fiddle, and Emily sings along all of the old songs. Irish stuff, Gaelic stuff, Scottish songs, and all that. It kind of becomes like an old-fashioned Irish Rovers pub party after a point. You remember that? The Irish Rovers? How they used to have that show on TV? And it was basically like a big pub party you could watch on TV. My mother and I used to watch it. That was before we had cable, so there was nothing else on, right? I was just a little kid, but I liked it. Because I knew Dad was here. When I was watching the show, I knew my dad was working in the bar here, doing the same thing as we were doing, watching TV. So I always liked that show. You caught me at kind of the sweet spot. I'm about 3 beers into my evening here. Probably the perfect state. I don't mind talking right now, like this. I could probably fill that tape recorder of yours if you let me keep going. Not about anything in particular. I don't really have anything in particular to say about anything, really. Plus, I'm busy enough just keeping all of this going around us. The repair crew, they're gonna be walking in here soon. Half of them are sleeping here now. Most of the rest of them are set up at the fire hall down the street there. Gary's sleeping across the road in the convenience store with the Smiths and the Gundersons. Anyway, I got people to look after, I guess is what I'm saying, so it's not like I don't have anything to do. Your cuts are healing up okay, though. That's good to know. At least nothing's got infected. You put any more thought into helping the constables out with their night patrols? I don't think they've had many other people expressing much interest. Not since that last storm. It's too fucking cold out now for most people. Nearly froze my tits off today running from here across the street to pick up condiments from the store. It's like the snow came last to us this year, but when it came, it really fucking came, you know what I mean? And it brought the cold with it. I'm surprised they were able to repair the transformer that blew last week. And we're lucky it was the only thing that blew up with these temperatures. My beer's getting pretty low. You want another? I'm going to have another. Fuck, it's only 6:30. Lots of night left to get through. We still got the long stretch to come. Yes, we still got the long stretch ahead of us. I kind of like it here, like being here, like this. I kind of am really proud of myself. I'm proud I stocked up before the winter, that I can provide this to people, this place where we can read the names and still sing songs and have music and warm people up and feed people and everything. My dad didn't really want me working here, I don't think, growing up. I insisted when I came back from college and I bugged him enough, finally he had to give in, right? because where the hell else was I going to work in Lancaster? But I don't think he ever intended me working here. But I think he'd be proud of me now. Really, I do, wherever he is, wherever he went. He'd be proud, I'm sure of it. He'd be proud of me. I'm going to have another. You want another?
Constable Xavier, 39, Lancaster, Ontario.
He damn near broke my jaw. And I think he knew that at the time, and that's ultimately what made us pause the fight, if you ask me. He clocked me. Connected, too, in just the right place. And then my jaw popped. Made this big sound. We both thought at first it might be broken. It wasn't, though. Which was lucky as hell for me. Well, for both of us, really. Because we were pissed at each other, but it's not like we wanted to kill each other or anything. We just had to get it out of our system, you know? Because when things started going downhill, it started this rift, eh? Half of us were really skeptical and concerned with what everything the CSIS and then the government and eventually the military, what they were telling us. Those guys in the black suits with the teeth. What they were telling us to do. Half of us were skeptical, but the other half of us were just trying to do what we were told by the higher-ups. So that's how the rift started. And George, he had been trying to follow orders like he was supposed to throughout the whole thing. But me and some of the other fellas, well, we were skeptical. All the way back, when they started telling us, we had to keep checking in with the media, make sure those idiots understood they couldn't just go reporting every disappearance all willy-nilly and starting a panic in the people. I mean, the police keeping your media quiet, that's like something you see in other countries, really. On this kind of scale, I mean. On the type of scale they were asking from us this time around. Some of us were starting to get really cynical about things. Starting sharing whatever information we could with the media to hopefully help them get the message out so people would know what was going on and wouldn't be so vulnerable to whatever it was that was happening. Because we're just a provincial force. We're not the RCMP. And we, you know, meet a lot of people and we're policing face-to-face and all like that. But some of the guys, like George, who were just following orders, well, they heard about some of the rest of us sharing information and all that, and that pissed them all off. And meanwhile, this great vanishing of people was happening everywhere. Of course, we knew about it. You know how many missing persons reports I have personally? I mean, personally handled the paperwork for? We knew all about it since September. And there was evidence it started happening before September even, probably back as early as June, I think. But CSIS, the government, the guys in the black suits, they wanted everything to be kept all hush-hush as possible until they could figure out how to spin it. How to get all the information under control and spin it so that people wouldn't, I don't know, revolt or whatever, get rowdy. Because people are rowdy, especially in groups. They get rowdy, I mean, people are rowdy by nature, but put them in a group, right? So there had been this rift brewing between all of us at the detachment and all of this vanishing of people happening around us. And then some of our own started going missing, not reporting in for shifts and all that. Which stretched all of us out. We started working extra shifts on top of all the regular shit which we had to police, like the domestics and the people getting up to their usual stupid shenanigans. And this just kept getting worse and worse. People I'd worked beside for years just all of a sudden not showing up for work. And then I never saw them again. Same thing as George was going through. And the government just kept telling us to hold the line, keep things contained and all like that. And I'll always remember, this was a month ago, I came into work, and George was standing in the chief's office. Just standing there. Staring at the chief's chair. Office was empty, except for me and him. It just had kind of happened all around us, eh? We'd gotten to the point we were so tired and overworked and trying to hold the line. And George kind of blamed me and the others for not holding the line earlier on, you know? And I kind of blamed him for putting his orders before the people here, even though we were both on the same side the whole time. We'd been on the same side. We were just walking across the street together, walking side by side, and I was exhausted. We were heading across the street towards our patrol car, and I don't know what it was. I just had some kind of emotion just all of a sudden kind of rise up inside me. And I just turned and hit him. Mid-stride. And I just kind of looked at him after I hit him. I don't know if I expected him to fall or what. I didn't intend to hit him more than once. But I had to hit him that one time for some reason. And then he was on me. Just rapid fire. Pow, pow, pow. Pummeling the shit out of me. And then he pulled his fist way back and just launched one right onto my jaw. And so then the sound my jaw made, we thought he had broken it. On top of everything, standing in the middle of this town we couldn't protect, that was falling apart. On top of all that, we thought he had broken my jaw. And he looked at me, and I touched my jaw with my hand, and I could tell it was still in one piece, still connected to the rest of me. Just a close call was all it was. And I let out this kind of, oh, I don't know, sigh of relief, I guess it must have. And after I sighed, that's when I started crying. Because it had been such a close call. I mean, can you imagine a broken jaw on top of everything else? And he saw me crying, and he realized he didn't hate me or anything. He wasn't really angry at me, not even for hitting him. He was more angry about the town falling to shit on our watch, and so, well, yeah. He started crying, too. And then he hugged me. And I guess that's the story behind all of that. And I mean, people were watching as all of this happened. I imagine there's been gossip. But, I mean, let's face it. When you're a cop, you know people are going to gossip about you. We're aware of the rifts around us. It's not like they're invisible.
Emily, 41, Lancaster, Ontario.
Paul? I think Paul might be in love with me, which is really sweet. He's very sweet and honest and naive. I mean, fuck, that's just who he is. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just representative of that type, if you follow me. Because there are two types. There's the type that believe in the razzle-dazzle of it all, and then there's the type who understand that the razzle-dazzle of it all is just a singer trying to make her way, if you follow. It's an act. Of course it's an act. I know that. Paul thinks he knows that, and he plays along. He even promotes it in the show. He'll sit up in the corner, all innocent and matter-of-fact, and just start tuning his fiddle, applying resin to the bow. No one else in the place suspects, at that point, that he's about to launch into a performance, that the way the whole gig works is that Paul starts off by Paul not intending to play. He's just performing maintenance on his violin. And then, once he's tuned, he plays a few notes from some crowd pleaser, a few notes of Rattlin' Bog or Black Velvet, or he plays a few notes and then he stops and listens to the room. And what's he listening for? He's listening to see if he can hear anyone humming or singing or whistling. He's listening to see if someone in the room picked up on the song. Because if someone in the room has picked up on the song, like in their head, they might not even be aware that they've done it. What that means is that person's ready to sing along. And if someone in the room is ready to sing along, that means someone in the room's ready to listen. Which means all of a sudden, we have an audience. Which means all of a sudden, somebody is ready to buy into the act. And if he hears someone start to pick up a song, that's when he'll launch into a little more of it. He'll play a couple of phrases and make it look like he's just messing around with his fiddle, like casually. He's still coming off as though he has no intention of performing. And he never plays the full chorus at this point. That's the rule. At this point, however, whomever it is that has picked up the song, they want to really want to hear that song by this point. And this is usually when they speak up. Paul stopped playing the song right before the chorus of the thing, and someone in the all of a sudden audience we've so subtly built up will say something. Something like, "Aww," or "Play the whole thing." And that's when we know the hustle's gonna work big time. You see them ask for it. First, you make them think it was their idea in the first place. Then you make them ask for it. Once they ask for it, the song, you give them what they ask for. You give them what they didn't even know they wanted in the first place. And Paul will start playing the song. He'll even play the chorus. And then halfway through the second verse, I'll finally take notice of him. Because I've been drinking at the bar this whole time, in my dress, looking exhausted or trying to keep to myself, but I let myself overhear the performance. I let myself notice the song. And I let everyone see how I just can't help myself. How I just can't help but fall under the spell of Paul and his fiddle. Everyone in the audience gets to watch me out of the corner of their eye. They get to watch me go through what they just went through. The final stage, Paul and I, after Paul has already given them what they wanted, we take it one step further. We give them something they never even imagined would happen. I start singing from my seat at the bar. And then when I start to sing, people get excited because it's fun. Another person joining in the game. And when I sing, I reveal my talent, my voice. I really let it out, really let them have it, everyone. And Paul gets this look in his eyes, one of surprise, as though he didn't even expect me to blow everyone away with my voice, if you follow me. And after the show, we perform until we feel tired. This is pretty normal for us. After the show, I go back to my seat at the bar, and then I wait. It takes about a minute or less. Someone always comes over here in this place. It's either Carly or one of the guys from the repair crew, or sometimes Paul himself. And I got nothing to worry about for the rest of the evening. All the food and drink and pot and places to sleep I can handle. Before this whole state of emergency stuff, I never lacked for anything. If you can sing, if you understand the steps of how the hustle works, you don't have to worry about a single damn thing. You can make yourself the queen of a different little shithole every night of the week. But like I said, there's two types of people in the world. People who know what the razzle-dazzle really is, and then, well, the people who actually believe in it. Like, fully. With their whole hearts and souls, and even though the illusion, it's an economy. You follow me? It's an economy. People working to survive. So I don't buy into this place either, as a result. This bar, Lancaster. What these people are all trying to do here by keeping themselves all together. Lancaster isn't some kind of special little place or special group of people. They're not some kind of family or anything like that. It's just another shitty dive with a bunch of losers crammed into it, trying to convince themselves that life right now isn't as shitty as it really is. A bunch of terrified losers getting more lonely and insane night by night. They turn into junkies. Junkies for here, this moment in time. Junkies for the memory of an illusion, something that didn't exist in the first place. They turn into junkies and then into living ghosts. And eventually they'll all just disappear altogether. I get the hustle. I've been doing it my whole life, this act. This bar is just like all the others. I shake my hips, breathe out when I sing. The world around me just turns into a ghost. And I'm always aware of the grave. How I'm dancing and singing as I drift towards my inevitable fate, which can only be death. But the hustle's fun. The act is fun. I want to keep having fun. Until I end up in the ground. Until Paul starts to get too creepy and asks me something gross, like, will you marry me? Marriage. Talk about illusions. Talk about people deluding themselves. I'd be happier in the dirt.
Constable George, 41, Lancaster, Ontario.
No. I want you to record me, because I want... We're getting to the point where me and Xavier have abandoned trying to fill out paperwork or anything like that. So there's not going to be any printed record of this. But that being said, I do believe there's something in what I'm about to tell you that I'd kind of like you to take away from this with you, okay? First off, me and Xavier, we really appreciate you volunteering to help us with the patrols and everything. That's great and everything. And I just want to say that you're really... It's nice to see that initiative in someone your age and that you're enjoying your time here in Lancaster and everything. Carly says you've been helping her at the pub, and that's great. But in terms of helping us with the patrols, well, I'm just going to put it out there. First off, you don't have any training in law enforcement, first off. I mean, a bunch of security shifts in some apartment building, that's great and all, but it doesn't really mean you've had any real experience, first off. Just because you know how to use that gun of yours, first off, you're lucky I don't just take that gun away from you so you don't hurt yourself. If circumstances were different right now, I'd just be taking that firearm from you, first off, okay? The second thing is, me and Xavier aren't really sure right now how much longer this place is gonna last. If you get my meaning. We were talking about it last night, and neither one of us really know what's going to happen next. I mean, we have some idea of what's going to happen next, right? Someday soon here, the power is going to go off, and the repair teams aren't going to be able to get it going again. We're lucky that it's been starting to warm up early, because I don't think the power is going to last for much longer. I think once that power shuts off for good... I mean, some people are probably going to stay here, some of the townies, the people in the pub. But once that power goes, a lot of the guys on the repair team, they're going to be leaving. They're going to be heading for somewhere they actually have a shot at fixing things up, if you know what I mean. And me and Xavier aren't sure if we're going to keep enforcing the law so much after that, okay? We were talking about it last night. We're not sure if there's much point. The whole keeping up appearances thing so much anymore. If the power goes. If the repair guys leave. And we sure the hell don't want to set up some kind of patrol duty just to have everything fall to shit and then have to tell you we've decided to shut down the detachment, I guess is what I'm saying. If you did something stupid, like try and stay behind after we leave and started thinking of yourself as, like, I don't know, the sheriff or something here. Like you had some kind of legitimacy backing you up in that kind of instance. Because you're just a kid, first off. A place like this isn't going to become your burden, if you get me. We're not going to let you think like you have the right to make this place your burden when you don't. You're not from here, and you seem like a real good kid, so we're not going to allow that to happen. We don't want you getting any kind of crazy, stupid ideas in your head. But we get that you want to help, so what I want to offer you is a ride out of town. After we're done talking here, me and Xavier need a couple of letters delivered to Gananoque. Apparently the military have set up some kind of rally point in Gananoque. Why Gananoque? I have no idea. The place is a fucking tourist trap. It's not a defendable position or anything. Regardless, we need someone to deliver some information to them. If you're up to doing that. The people here don't need you to stay. We don't need you to stay here. You're not even from here, but we need to send word to Gananoque about what's happening here. And we think you could make it. If you're serious about helping us. We lost 2 guys yesterday from the repair team, 2 of the more knowledgeable guys. I don't want to get into it. All I'm saying is we're losing people here, people we need to keep this thing going. I don't think that all of us gathering around each other is turning out to be the right move for us. For people, I mean. I just think it paints a brighter target on all our backs. Makes it easier for whomever it is that's doing this to find us. Me and Xavier think you stand a better chance of making it out on your own. Follow the roads, but walk through the woods, you get me? Keep quiet, that sort of thing. Tell anyone you meet along the way to do the same. You're gonna be like a modern-day Laura Secor, think of it like that. Fun, yeah? You remember, like from those Canadian Heritage Minutes? You can make it to Gananoque, kid. I get that it's cold, but you can make it. Here are the letters.
Fortune of Wolves was written by Ryan Griffith. The series was produced by Big Noise Audio Collective and presented by Theater New Brunswick. The show was directed by Ryan Griffith with help from Jillian Hansen. Recording, editing, and sound design by Matt Carter. Music for the series was created by Counting On Downstairs, with additional scoring by Matt Carter. To learn more about the series and the artists involved, visit tnb.nb.ca or look for the Big Noise Audio Collective on Facebook. This episode featured Kat Hall as the Chief Archivist, Greg Everett as Todd, Matt Spinney as Ed, Caitlin Adair as Carly, Alex Rio as Officer Xavier, Rebecca Chasse as Emily, and Michael Holmes-Lauder as Officer George. Next time on Fortune of Wolves.
I asked you to shut the door, and you just looked at me like a baby squirrel who's forgotten where he buried his acorn.
Can't be going around sticking people with knives like that. Someone might shoot you.
Only half of the fucking aliens left. The other half stayed here on Earth and live with the clones of themselves that they made.
But don't ask me about what's going on, though, because your guess is as good as mine.
It's a shame because everything was getting so much better.
Turn that fucking thing off!
I'm just kidding. I'm kind of hilarious.